Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Very, very excited about this week's show. Stephen A. Smith from ESPN is the guest, followed by the Train of Thought segment. Stephen A. was phenomenal. Very open, very honest about changes to First Take and his move to have Max Kellerman removed from the show. Stephen A. explains why and gives us what Max's reaction was like. And he gets into the whole thing about debating, what sports TV debate is all about, what the goal is, what this business is all about. Fantastic stuff. Very honest from Stephen A. And thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. And then in Train of Thoughts, Sal Akata comes on from SNY and WFAN in New York. And we talk about the Brady Belichick game, Monday Night Mannings, Peyton and Eli. Another great week. Sopranos movie, Curb Your Enthusiasm return, all that covered in Train of Thoughts. All right, let's kick it off with a big interview with Stephen A. Smith right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, first time on the SI Media Podcast. Very happy to have him. And I feel very important because he's actually doing this from a car, which I don't know, makes me feel like, you know, we had to get this done. And it's the host of First Take on ESPN and also Stephen A.'s world, Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A., how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm good. We've had, let's see, Keith Hernandez did this podcast from his backyard in Sag Harbor, and we had someone do it out. I think Andrew Siciliano did it outside the NFL studios and NFL Network. Now we have you in a car. So I like this. It's, you know, everyone's got all the fancy setups these days. I like something a little different without the fancy background.
I'm in a car off right before exit 3 on the New Jersey Turnpike heading home.
All right. Wednesday's a good night. We got no football tonight, so it's and the NBA hasn't started yet, so we can take some time here and get into this. But before we get into anything, how did you find out you were being? I don't want to use the word made fun of because that has a negative connotation. You were featured on John Oliver's show over the weekend in a very funny bit.
Oh man, it was funny. Listen, when you're on TV as much as I am. And in social media, in terms of, you know, my videos being posted for First Take, Stephen A.'s World, and other places and stuff like that, that comes with the territory, man. All I ever ask is for people to be funny and to be as accurate as you can be. You know, I accept responsibility and accountability for anything that I do on the airwaves. And if I make people laugh because of my facial expressions in this case, or some of the things that I say, you know, that's what comes with it. Jay Farrell for Saturday Night Live interviewed or imitated me years ago. Obviously, Frank Caliendo has done it. Scott Van Pelt has done it. Jamie Foxx has done it. The list just goes on and on. This guy, Shiggy, that has his own space on Instagram, you know, with me stuttering and stuff like that. I'm just sitting there going like, these guys are hilarious, man. And, you know, when they do that good of a job of getting me down, what the hell am I going to say? I mean, I'm looking at myself. I'm like, yeah, I did do that. So it doesn't bother me at all. Yeah. You know, and John Oliver's great. So it was funny. I'm mad I didn't think about it. I didn't think of it myself.
I've written many times that what you do is performance art. Would you say that's fair or unfair?
Don't think about it that way. I'm not going to say it's unfair. You know, I can understand that interpretation. I would tell you that we're in a personality driven business. I would tell you that the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. So I get that part and it doesn't offend me in the slightest. My biggest thing is just making sure that, you know, just don't forget my resume. That's what I tell people, even the cynics, the critics. You know, don't forget my resume. You know, I scratched and clawed my way to where I am today. You know, I was in the press boxes. I started off as a high school writer. I was an intern before that. And I elevated from high school to colleges, to the pros, to being an NBA columnist. And in 2003, when I became a general sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, I was the 21st person in the history of the 21st African-American in the history of this country to be named a general sports columnist. I paid dues to get here. And so for me, the only thing that makes me reluctant or apprehensive for people to talk about, you know, me, you know, just it's like a performing art or for me as a personality, the only reticence I have about it in any way is when I feel somebody is trying to do that, to gloss over a resume that I've earned. As long as they recognize and recall my resume, I'm totally good with it.
Well, even listen, put the resume aside, and it is a lengthy resume. And I remember you as your days as a Philly columnist. Put that aside. When someone says performance art, when I'm saying it, at least that's a skill and a talent. I mean, not everybody can do it. I think actually very few people can do it where it's effective. So
yeah,
in a way, it's a compliment, I think.
Well, I take it that way. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I take it. I'm not saying that I don't take it that way, especially from you. What I'm saying is there are people who are cynics that would say that, but it's after a litany of insult to whatever would be thrown in my direction. And it's usually with them forgetting my resume. And that's the only thing that, you know, I'm never hesitant to remind people of, because it's my way of saying I put in the work. Now you're doing television. Things have changed. And so it's not just about what you say. It's about how you say it. It's how you look. It's your diction. It's your tenor. It's your mood. It's all of those different things. It's listening to the person that's across from you. It's getting where they're coming from and how. It's telling the audience that you think they're full of it without saying they're full of it. It's telling the audience it's a wow moment without saying wow. All of those different things that you're pointing to are things that I've been blessed and fortunate enough to some degree to have mastered doing what I do. And some of it is learned. Some of it just comes natural to me. And I'm proud to be able to say that, you know, I can, you know, react extemporaneously. I can act off the cuff and just naturally get what an audience would like to see and hear. And I am proud of that. So you're right. I get where you're coming from.
Yeah. And you mentioned obviously the resume, and obviously now you are the man at ESPN with multiple shows. And with that comes, I think, a couple of things that I find very interesting. There's two things there. When you're in that position, I think you can obviously get away with a lot more than most people. Sometimes I say maybe you're an untouchable at ESPN. In this day and age, I don't know if anyone's untouchable since, you know, one word
I'm
gets
not.
You. Yeah, but
I can assure you I'm not untouchable, but I got you.
But you recently did two things that I appreciated in this business. The first one is you did a radio interview recently. I think it may have been with Charlamagne. I'm not 100% sure. I should have looked that up. But where you said you came out, and I wish more people would do this, your goal is to make ESPN money and then for you to get a cut of that money.
That was the Breakfast Club. That was Charlamagne.
Breakfast Club. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And why don't more people just say that's what this is all about?
I think that people try to come across as self-righteous, as upstanding, as neutral, without any feelings of subjectivity whatsoever. And they just don't get, no one's buying that anymore. You know, gone are the days of looking at a Ted Koppel, a Peter Jennings, a Tom Brokaw, a Dan Rather, a Sam Donaldson covering the White House and other stuff like that, and looking at them and saying, they're totally objective. They have no feelings about it. They're just giving you the facts. The American public, at the very least, has said, no, that's not good enough anymore. We want to know where you stand. We want to know how you feel and why, because we can get the facts in a matter of minutes, if not seconds, at least the facts that have been disseminated to already one entity already. By the time it goes out, you know, the world has it. So within minutes. So we got that part. Now what matters is for you to tell us how you feel about it. And so as a result, you have folks that struggle to make their thoughts and feelings matter. And that's why it's a struggle for them. That's why they want to go back to the good old days. Well, guess what? I'm somebody whose opinion matters. It resonates. We look at First Take, which has been number one since I arrived in 2012, and we've been number one for 9 years and counting, knock on wood. It could end tomorrow, but it can't take away what I've been able to do the last 9 years. First with Skip Bayless and obviously then Max Kellerman. But the biggest thing about it is that when we say all of that, we got to understand, I wish it was that way too. I just accept the fact that it's not. And I adapt. And you have so many people that don't want to adapt. And then what we see now, and it's not to denigrate or berate, you know, media columnists or people that are, you're all my contemporaries. And please don't get me wrong. I understand. And it comes with the business. But one of the things that I'm mindful of is that you have people who try to make a career out of talking about people like me. And I'm like, well, here's my discomfort with that. I recall working in New York before and then Philadelphia after, where you had people who would literally market themselves to the teams that they were covering as the individual that would call out the media for them. And then, so if you, I'll call out this guy in the media for you so you could give me this information. So if Stephen A. writes an article about the Philadelphia 76ers and they didn't like it, well, management for the Philadelphia 76ers could go and talk to that columnist and give him nuggets of information in hopes that he'll attack me. And that's what you use to make yourself bigger in this business. That's not what we're here for. That's not what we're all about. And so when I look at things like that and I see that, I try to stay above the fray and be able to stomach it all. Even though I know I'm a personality and open to attacks, I know where the agendas come from a lot more than people realize, certainly a lot more than the public realizes. And I'm prepared to handle it accordingly.
I don't know if you'd agree with this, but I do feel like social media has played a role in exposing the agendas, because I've always said this too. You know, fans, sports fans are, you know, they're not exactly maybe the most sane and rational people. And they think every announcer hates their team and every announcer's that.
Right.
What sports fans need to understand is, yes, announcers are 100% biased and not objective because they're getting information from agents, PR people, people in the organization. So there's, you know, that I think is what has been able to be exposed in this age of social media, is you know more about relationships that people in the media may have with sources.
I do. I mean, I've been blessed and fortunate, Jim, not just to be incredibly connected, but here's what happens. And I'm not trying to say I know everybody, but I talk to everybody. But I would tell you that I'm in the loftiest position that I've ever been in my career. It's not because of the money. It's because of the platform and what I have done with that platform. My willingness to tackle issues, my willingness to make myself a target because I'm not worried about how people feel if I'm passionate enough in my heart about where I stand and how I feel. That puts me in the eye of the storm. Well, here's what that says to a lot of other subjects that you may be talking about. He's brave. He's fearless. He ain't scared. We can talk to him. Because if we are able to convince him that we're right and he sees our side of things, he won't be fearful in addressing it with the fervor it deserves. And so as a result of that, I get calls every day. And I mean, every day. And when I'm on First Take and people see my head down, I'm usually receiving texts literally during segments about what's going on. Man, here's what's going on. Man, why did you say that? You got to say this. Why didn't you say this? You should have said that. You letting them off the hook. Blah, 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 blah. This is every day, 5 days a week minimum. There is never, ever, and when I say never, I emphasize never. There is never a day that I go on the air that I'm not receiving texts from players, coaches, executives, scouts, player personnel directors, owners, league officials. There is not one single day that this happens that I'm not receiving texts literally in a minute of every show and practically every segment. There may be a segment here or there that's missed, but trust me when I tell you, it never stops, because they feel you're in this role. This is your position. We can't be quoted. You need to tackle this issue. And most of the time I don't listen during the show. I make sure I wait and then I'll address the issue after I have an opportunity to study it. But that's the kind of pressure seat that I'm in. But I believe I was made for it, so it doesn't faze me.
I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it seems rude someone would text you while you're in the middle of doing the show. At least wait till the commercial break. Is there a story you can share about someone who texted you during the show that ended up being a thing where you went on the, like, who's like, can you give us a big name that texted you something that either they were pissed or they wanted you to address? I don't know if you can reveal any of that, but
I can't tell you that.
I got you.
There have been trades.
Okay.
There have been issues that players have had with the media, players have had with other players, all of that other stuff. And literally they would say, what the hell are you talking about? I could tell you one story that I did. I was on First Take one day before Kobe retired, and Kobe and I were pretty tight, not as tight as he was with other players, of course, because I was the media, but he and I were pretty tight, and God rest his soul. And he called me, and excuse my language, he said, he picked up the phone and he said, because he texted me and he said, call me. And then I had to wait. And then an hour later, because I was on the air, he said, motherfucker, I said, call me now, you know? And so the minute the show was over, I'm like, look, man, I got a job to do. I'm on the air, blah, 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 blah. He said, what the fuck did you just say? Did you just say blah, blah, blah? Have you lost your mind? And I'm like, no. I said, no, I didn't say it. This player said it, and I'm explaining it. He said, don't you ever go on the air and say no bullshit like that without calling me first again. You know, that was like typical of certain things. You've got guys that, listen, I got a lot of these guys on speed dial. Not everybody, but a lot of them. And they're watching. And if I say something or some family member sees me say something, I'm going to get a call. And those are the players I laugh. I say it facetious because it is funny, but it's also true. I'm going to be very careful about what I say. Now, I try to be anyway, but especially with guys like that, because there's quite a few guys that are like Kobe in terms of that, that will pick up the phone and they will stalk me until they find me. You better call me. Oh, you didn't say that bullshit you just said on the air today. Call me back now because they got a problem with something that somebody told me about.
I love that he didn't realize you're on the air and can't make the phone call. That's a phenomenal have you heard from Kyrie Irving over the past 2 days? Has he texted you during First Take?
No. Kyrie and I haven't talked since last year because I got on him because of, you know, the way he was talking to the media. And I said, that's not smart. It's just not smart.
Especially here in New York.
And he didn't like that. So we haven't spoken since, and that's fine.
Maybe if we have a little time at the end, we can get into this whole thing with Kyrie and the vaccines, because that's a wild story how it's going to play out with the NBA now saying they'll dock pay. But I just want to finish up because I appreciated what you said about, you know, this is about making money. It is a business. And, you know, recently, obviously, Max Kellerman left the show. Reports came out that you were responsible for it, and you didn't run from those reports. You came out and you said, I wanted to make the change. You took responsibility, which... that does not happen anymore. ESPN PR could have put on a whole little show and song and dance for people like me and who cover this stuff. Why did you want to make that change?
I thought it ran its course. Even though we were number one, numbers were dipping. Chemistry was an issue. And, you know, we needed to be better. I wasn't pointing the finger at him. I was saying we did not work as a pair. I think that Max is one of the nicest guys in the world. He's incredibly knowledgeable about his boxing and other sports, by the way. I knew that there were a plethora of opportunities within the company for him to be a part of, which has been proven because he's now with Keyshawn and Jay on a nationally syndicated radio show in the morning for 4 hours. And he's got his own national television show in the afternoons from 2 to 3. This just in, which I think is doing well, and I wish him nothing but the best. You know, I think that people get construed thinking, well, you know what? Stephen A. doesn't like Max. They couldn't be further from the truth. I like him and respect him. We just weren't working anymore because the audience was telling us that we had essentially just flatlined. We were the same, and we weren't fresh together. And so as a result of that, I told the bosses how I felt, wishing him nothing but the best, rooting for him, making sure everybody knows if he needed me, I wouldn't hesitate to be there for him. But I'm not going to apologize for anybody, to anybody rather, for being committed to winning. And if I believe that I'm a part of a formula that's not going to win any longer, I'm going to change that formula, whether it's me moving on or them moving on. And that is the way I have always been. And that is the way I will continue to be. I'm incredibly excited about the direction that First Take is in now. Molly Curum has Curum Rose has been sensational. So have all the contributors, Michael Irvin on Mondays, Keyshawn on Tuesdays, Marcus Spears on Wednesdays, Dan Orlovsky on Thursdays, Tim Tebow on Fridays, with all the contributors like Mina Kimes and Kimberly Martin and Ryan Clark and Paul Feinbaum and Jeff Saturday. And, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. Bart Scott, Dominique Foxworth, everybody's been fantastic. But it's fresh voices going up against me. I think the show is incredibly exciting. We're excited to be doing it. We're having a blast. And nothing feels stale now. And I've been doing this for 9 years. So I think I'd have a pretty good idea, considering the fact that I've been doing it 9 years and I've been number one every single year that I've done it. I think I'd kind of have an idea of what works. If I sat up there and I said, it's his fault, that's a different argument. That's not what I said. What I said is we don't work together. And a decision needs to be made regarding us. And that's what I was taking responsibility for. And I will never run from that.
Did he agree with your assessment?
No, he did not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's got to be tough for you because you said you like him personally. And obviously you have this professional issue. And if he doesn't agree, I don't know what the status.
Well, you could call it tough. I'm personal friends with a lot of folks on the show. Let us feel like we flatlining and watch what happens to them.
So tell me,
I have a phenomenal boss in Dave Roberts who supports me at every turn. Let me drop in the ratings and watch what Dave Roberts does. Norby Williamson is an executive VP for ESPN, who's done a phenomenal job for us. Jimmy Pitaro, the president, we have a great relationship with each other. Let me start losing. Let me let the ratings plummet. And watch what they do, Jim. You're gonna see a press release. You're gonna see interviews. Well, you know, Stephen A. I mean, right. We love them, but things
change.
You know,
change of direction.
That's how it goes. That's the business that we're in. We all have to accept it and be clear. My day will come where it's my turn to step aside and say, okay, it's time for somebody else to be up in here because I'm no longer what I used to be. That's the business we're in.
Yeah. So tell me. Is the goal, you mentioned the cast of characters that you have, you're rotating every day and bringing, is the goal though to find one co-host for you? Because you mentioned with Max chemistry, and I would think any show like that is so dependent on chemistry. And if you have so many people, you know, is it a temporary thing with all the hosts or is the goal to get one co-host to go against Stephen A. every day?
The public will determine that. If the public continues to keep us number one, and it's fresh and lively and we're thriving, then the public would say, we like it just the way it is. If the public says, well, you know what? On Tuesdays, Keyshawn's ratings are double what Dan Orlovsky's ratings are on Thursdays, and Michael Irvin is triple what Tim Tebow is on Fridays, and all of this other stuff, well, guess what? Then that will tell us what we need to do. That's the business we're in. This is the thing that shocks me. We get ratings every single day for every quarter hour. Mm-hmm. That's the business we're in. We know exactly who's doing what and how valuable they are, what's working and what's not. That is what we use as the litmus test, along with other things, you know, YouTube numbers, all of this other stuff, social media, all of those things come into play. But the numbers tell us the story about who's resonating, who's not, what works, what doesn't. And we make our decisions from there.
So tell me what makes a good sports debate. What are you looking for in the person sitting across from you on any topic when you are going to go at it about something?
You got to have an idea of what the hell you're talking about. You got to know what you feel. You got to know what you feel and why. You have to be fearless in expressing those feelings, be unapologetic about it, and sincerely have someone opposite of you who is opposite of you. They're not just looking across from you. They actually feel differently than you feel. And they're almost, if not equally, as unapologetic about expressing themselves as you are. Very simple.
You've done that show, you said, I think, since 2012. So that's nine years.
Yes, when Skip Bayless asked me to come on board, yes.
Have you ever, though, once ever said something you didn't mean for the sake of an argument?
I've done it several. Well, not that I didn't mean. I articulated myself in a fashion that can only be deemed as responsible. Let's take it to several accounts. I got suspended because I brought up the word provoke when we were talking about the whole Ray Rice thing. Right. I did not mean that the way that it came out. I didn't mean that. What I was raised by five women, for Christ's sake. You know, I put my hands on men who put their hands on women. I have never been a proponent of any kind of violence against women. You know, I'm a guy that's in the streets, and if I saw a man putting his hands on a woman, I would try to stop him. So, of course, that what I was talking about is if you're alone and some no good punk of a dude would choose to put his hands on a woman while you're in that moment all by yourself, be careful not to exacerbate a situation, because my God, there's nobody there to defend you, and who knows what he'll do. In other words, do something to buy some time to get out of that situation. That's all I meant, but it came out wrong. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, I had to own responsibility for misspeaking. Recently, the Shohei Ohtani thing, I wasn't saying he wasn't worthy of being marketed. I was saying Major League Baseball's history shows they won't market somebody like that. And it's a foolish decision on their part, and they need to do a better job of it. But that's not how it came out. And so when you look at things from that situation, certainly there have been times in my career where I wish that I could have a do-over and speak about things more articulate than I did.
So you went to a couple of heavy topics. I actually meant it sort of in a lighter way. I meant, like, do you ever say, like, oh, this guy's a top five quarterback, when you really think, oh, this guy sucks, but, you know, we're trying to do good TV here?
I don't make up what I say, my man. And the reason I don't do that is because I'm the kind of person that would be judged significantly more harshly for doing so than others. You know, when I'm tongue in cheek, it's clear to the audience I'm joking around. They know I'm playing. I don't give a serious face to something that I'm joking about and deceive my audience, because the number one thing that I have going for me is that the audience trusts me. They trust that I mean what I say, and I say what I mean, unless I tell them otherwise. Like, if I'm acting around and playing around, I'll do something like that. They know that I play Brick on General Hospital, the soap opera, and stuff like that. So they know that. But for the most part, my number one quality is my authenticity and the fact that I'm trustworthy, that people know I mean what I say and I say what I mean.
I'm curious, because you recently did something about Mitch Trubisky, which I found hysterically funny the way you delivered it. I it was in my column. You had the voice going high, low, and because yes. He had said he was happy to be in a place where he was wanted, but yep. He was the backup quarterback.
I did it on Stephen A's World.
The delivery was hysterical. Yes. But what I'm curious about that is, because I said earlier, I mean, you're at the top of the game, so you can get away with a lot more that others may not be able to. Are you conscious? Is it a fine line to always make sure, like, let's not get too mean or get too obviously it's all about professional, but these are athletes. They see everything you say. I even noticed, like, on Twitter, you posted that video and you added Mitch Trubisky. So I was like, ooh, I don't, does Mitch want to see that? So I was just curious your mindset with that kind of thing.
Number one, I'm very sensitive to that, but I have a job to do, and the job is to call it like I see it. I'm very, very big on leaving your personal life to you. Your personal life is your story to tell. Your public life, I have every right to say what I want to say as it pertains to your performance on the field. If you perform in a certain way, and this is what we see, and you've put your abilities on display, I have a right to speak on it, just like people have a right to speak on me in regards to what I say on television. I accept that. Am I mindful and cognizant? Yes, because, you know, it's interesting. My mother passed away in 2017, God rest her soul. And I hear my mother's voice in me all the time. And if I say something and I'm too harsh, I literally hear her with a West Indian accent. I did not raise you that way. I did. Why do you have to talk like that? You know, and I go, oh, you know, she wouldn't be happy now. Dial it back. Recently, I had a conversation with Kevin Durant's mother, who's always been wonderful to me. And I remember when I first returned to work after my mother died, they were in Cleveland and going against the Cavs, Golden State. And Kevin Durant's mother was waiting outside the locker room for me to give me a hug and to give her condolences for my mom's passing. And she gave me a hug and she spoke on behalf of all the NBA moms who have always been wonderful to me. And they were like, we love you. We're here for you, et cetera, et cetera. She said, but I'm going to get you for talking about my boy. And we just laughed and all of that stuff. And it was a laugh that I needed. But she had a serious conversation with me recently, just talking to me about the impact of my words and how it really affects how people are. And she wasn't getting on me at all. She was just being very respectful and just wanted me to be mindful of the kind of impact that I have. And so I'm the kind of person that I don't just talk to the players and team officials. I talk to wives. I talk to moms. I talk to brothers and sisters and family members and people like that, because I want people to know I'm not trying to be personal.
Right.
And I'm not trying to do something like that. And I'm somebody that can be reached out to. You can call me or confront me and say to me, I think you're wrong and here's why. And if I believe you and I said something on the air, I'll go on the air and apologize. I won't go in private and do it. If I said something on the air publicly, I'll correct myself publicly. If I apologize to you in private, I'll apologize to you publicly, because I'm a human being first. And that's what I try to do. And that's the kind of aura, the kind of just persona that I want to project. And I want people to know, you know, I'm not evil. I'm not going to care about what you think if every little thing affects you about me doing my job. But I'm not going to be evil. I'm not going to be malicious. And I'm not going to wish harm or negativity or failure upon you. That's not what I'm doing. I might chronicle it when it happens, but I'm not wishing it. And that's the kind of message that I try to send.
When your mom was with us, how often would she scold you about something you said on the show? Once a week, once a month?
About once a month. She wasn't a big sports fan, but she watched me. And literally, she didn't watch me for the sports content. She watched me to see how I talked about people. She wanted to pay attention to that, you know. And I remember one time I told a conversation. Michael Jordan confronted me years ago in the early 2000s about, because how I was talking about some of the picks that he had made or whatever. He said, Stephen A., what you say, man. It's the way you say it. And I looked at Michael and I said, Can I have a job? I said, because evidently that's what you want me to do. You want me to be your PR guy. I'm like, damn. I said, you have to be the only one that makes money. How I speak happens to work for me. Can I do my job? And he just started laughing. He said, I got you. I understand. I said, it's not like I'm faking. That happens to be how I talk. I'm an animated dude sometimes. I'm not animated dude 100% of the time, but animation comes with how I talk. I project. I disseminate. You know, I can be bombastic and demonstrative and also be mellow and calm. That's just who I am. I could use facial expressions to speak for me. Other time my volumes go up. Other time I whisper and I laugh. And, it's all of that comes along with it. Can I have a job? And he was like laughing. He's like, I got it.
That's great. And like you said at the beginning, there is an E in that ESPN for entertainment. If I can, two quick questions here to wrap, because I know you've got... Does Stephen A. Smith ever wake up in the morning, Monday through Friday, and not want to debate about sports and just maybe want to stay in bed and eat some pancakes and say, forget this shit for one day?
No, I never just want to lay in bed and do nothing. It's just that there are times where there's other things on my mind. Like, for example, when I hosted Jimmy Kimmel, that was a lifelong dream of mine to host late night. And that was an incredibly, incredibly big moment for me, because I didn't think about sports. I didn't want to think about sports. All I wanted to think about was doing that late night show. I mean, that particular day, sports did not matter to me at all. I didn't read the sports section. I didn't listen to sports talk radio. I didn't go online and read anything. I didn't want to know about it. All I wanted to do was that, because that moment was so important to me, to show that I could do late night, that I locked in and I zeroed in and nothing else mattered.
Is that the ultimate goal for you, to do late night? Yes. Is that the ultimate goal?
Listen, I want to be a producer of content. That's why I have my own production company. That's a big, big deal to me, Mr. SAS Productions. But also hosting late night, yes. It's something that I want to do. And I got to tell you, I'm going to do it. I hope it's with Disney. I got 4 years left on my deal. But if they don't want to do it, then I'm going to be looking elsewhere, because I'm telling you, that's how bad I want to do a late night show.
So let's speculate here for a little bit. 4 years from now, your contract's up, and let's say Disney or someone else offers you a late night show. Is Stephen A. done with sports at that point?
No, not unless they insist on it. But if I had my druthers, I would do both, because I can do both. And I know I can do both. I'm a workaholic like that. That's how I'm made. It's who I am. And I accept it. But for me personally, it's just a very, very big deal to me to just do that. And so I wouldn't want to give up First Take. I wouldn't want to give up the NBA. But feeling the need to be on sport, on television, to talk sports as much as I already am, that would die down to some degree. But the jobs that I have in sports, in terms of doing First Take in the NBA, that would not subside that much as far as I'm concerned. But I would definitely make concessions to do late night television.
If you were given your own late night show tomorrow and could book any guest to interview, who would it be?
Well, I would tell you Barack Obama would be one, because I'm a fan. It would definitely be him.
Barack Obama to do some more interviews. I feel like he's like disappeared, and I don't like that. He's comforting. Well, we need to see him more.
He's disappearing right now because he doesn't want to take the shine away from President Biden, but he needs
take
to.
Take the shine. Take the shine.
Yeah, take the shine away. But I would tell you Barack Obama definitely would be one. Tiger Woods would be another. Okay. I would tell you that I've already had it with Snoop Dogg and Jamie Foxx. Because I love those guys. They're both personal friends and they are just phenomenal. I think that Snoop Dogg is so brilliant, so gifted.
How does he not have a sports show?
Only because he doesn't want to.
Okay.
He doesn't want to. When the time is right, he'll do it, but he can do it if he wants to, especially when he's calling boxing.
Oh, yeah.
Calling the Olympics. He's phenomenal. He's just phenomenal.
You know where he was the best? I apologize for interrupting you. Where he was the best is he did an NHL game, I think, a couple of years ago.
Oh, I don't know that. I heard about it, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And I happen to believe that Jamie Foxx is the most talented dude in Hollywood. But you know who else I love? And I tell you these guys right here. I'm a huge Mark Wahlberg fan, and he knows me and I know him. I'm a fan of his. They're just some good brothers, man. Him, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. If I had my druthers, I would love to interview all three of them together.
That'd be good.
Mark Wahlberg, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. I just think they're phenomenal. And I just think that, and of course, Charlize Theron, I love her. And you know, just so many others. But I'm a real big fan of her, Meryl Streep, people like that. You'd be surprised who I'd love to talk to, but Barack Obama and Tiger Woods would definitely be at the top of my list. And of course, the one and only Jack. There's only one, Jack Nicholson. Definitely so.
Yeah. I just want to clear up the question I asked about, do you ever not wake up and not want to, I didn't mean stay in bed. I meant like, do you ever just not want to argue about whether LeBron did this or whether KD is this or Brady?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. I
do get tired of debating sometimes, but I never get tired of talking sports. Like, I don't mind answering questions, but I don't always like debating. It's my job on First Take in the morning. But I don't know. This could potentially be the final run in 4 years. It depends on what I've got going on in my life. Don't get me wrong. I love First Take. I love doing it. But I'm not limited. I believe there's a lot more that I bring to the table that obviously could make a boatload of money for Walt Disney and ESPN or Hulu or anybody else under the Walt Disney umbrella or somebody else if it comes to that. but while also making some money for myself. My quality of life is also very, very important to me. The only reason I'm on the East Coast right now is because of my daughters. I mean, if it wasn't for that, I would be ready to move out west. I'm so sick of cold weather. I can't even. My attitude is.
But you seem like you're such a New Yorker.
Yeah, I am. But I've been here all my life, with the exception of when I went away to college for Winston-Salem State. I love Southern California. I hate their taxes. I'm a capitalist, unapologetically so. I hate their taxes, but at least I get that beautiful weather for those taxes. Yeah. In Southern California. That's not what I always get in New York. And so for me, quality of life has become more important. And by the way, I just want to smile and laugh and have a good time more. You know, and I want to celebrate greatness, not just with the athletes, but with the actors and actresses, hip hop artists and everything else. I'm tired of being this guy that's always perceived as just bringing the hammer and bringing the rain. I do a lot of celebrating of other people as well. Mm-hmm. And I want that to be recognized because that's important to me, because I think those people deserve to be celebrated a hell of a lot more than me.
Well, listen, you should be celebrated for what you do. You're at the top of your game. It's been proven. So listen, everyone should get their, you know, their props when they're deserved.
That's for somebody else to determine, not me.
Right. All right. I made it through this whole interview without bringing up Stay Off the Weed, which I'm proud of, but I do have to ask, are you tired of that whole thing, or do you still get a kick out of it with the memes and the...
It's fun. It's fun because I mean it. I mean it because I don't mean it for everybody. Look, man, I got family members that smoke weed. Let's call it what it is, okay? Right. I'm from the streets of New York City. Of course, I know people that smoke weed. When I say stay off the weed, I'm talking about people who allow it to cost them their money. That's what I'm talking about. Just like I have a problem with, it's not that simple with the vaccinations, because with the vaccine, my issue with that is you have the potential to contaminate somebody else. So that pisses me off when you talk like it's a privacy issue. It's not a privacy issue. It's privacy when it affects just you. When it doesn't affect just you and it affects the masses and the public, well, damn it, that's a different problem altogether. And that's not a privacy matter. So I completely applaud the NBA for taking the position that they've taken in terms of if the local government mandates are handed down and you don't follow that, you don't get paid. I completely support that. Yeah. Absolutely 1,000%. That's the right thing to do.
Would you make, I'll end it with this. I mean, it's a weird one to end it on, but you were one of the first people, if not the first person, I believe, who had called out LeBron early on because LeBron had given the whole it's a private matter on the on the vaccine.
Yeah.
And he revealed this week he is vaccinated.
Yeah.
And now let me just say this, because you probably don't. I love LeBron. I'm a huge LeBron fan.
So do I.
It bummed me out that he gave the line about, you know, I did my research. LeBron, you're not doing any different research than anyone. It's the CDC. This is not a government issue. It's a medical issue. Like, this whole research is that line. Just
Everybody's a researcher now. Everybody's a researcher now.
Google. That's the research.
How about that?
And I love LeBron. I am a LeBron apologist. I thought, though, and then so he came out and he said he's not going to push anyone to get the vaccine. He thinks it's a private issue. What was your take on when he said that yesterday? Or Monday?
I accept it. What I would say to you is that I was happy that he did what he did yesterday, because I think that's all he needed to do.
I agree.
What I was unhappy about is that it took him this damn long. You could have done this a year ago, you know, and you could have helped a lot of lives along the way. And, you know, if you have reticence about putting something in your body, that's your right. If you're the kind of person that Googles and look at the ingredients of medicine that's given to you, as opposed to doing what 99% of us do, which is get a prescription from the pharmacy, from the doctor, go to the pharmacy and get the damn thing and take it. If you're different than that, more props to you. I'm not judging you. But you know what? It's a privilege to play in these leagues. It's not a right. And so the Kyrie Irvings of the world, who's making $35 billion, the Andrew Wiggins of the world, who's making $30 million, you want to take that position, you go right ahead. I'm the NBA. You don't play and you don't get paid. It's very, very simple to me.
It's going
to
be it's going to be a fascinating story to see how it plays out. It really, it's going to be perfect for you and your show, because it's going to be, they take the money away. That's going to be the game changer.
Listen, bottom line is they should take the money away. You should not, you listen, I don't want to talk to people about what to put in their bodies, but the reality of the situation is that you have the ability to compromise an entire multi-billion dollar business. If you're not vaccinated and you come down with COVID, it's not to say that you can't come down with COVID, even if you do get vaccinated, obviously, right. But the chances of doing so diminish greatly. And so knowing that is the reality, let's understand we all have an obligation to do all we can. And then for me as a Black man, where it resonates with me is that I was hesitant to take the vaccine. Then I had a gentleman by the name of Dennis Pullen, who's the president of Virtual Health in South Jersey, New Jersey, bring me down there and take me to the ICU. And I saw nothing but Black people in there because white folks were gobbling up the vaccines because it was available and they weren't as reticent about taking it as Black people were because we were busy living off of stuff like the Tuskegee experiment and things of that nature. Well, I would remind people that when it comes to the Tuskegee experiment, people weren't being vaccinated. They weren't having things, you know, placebos and all of this stuff injected into them. They weren't being treated. And they were led to believe they were being treated. And as a result of that, over the course of 40 years, you know, these people were contaminated. This is an entirely different ballgame. There is a vaccine that has proven for the most part to be healthy. Over 6.2 billion people have taken the vaccine. So knowing all of those things, for you to sit there and to say, it's a private matter, damn that. Stay your ass home. Don't come. Don't play. Lose out your money. And watch the league move on, because too much latitude and too much leeway has been given. We are the society that we are because we're a land of laws, and we understand where level of urgencies kick in and takes place. And we've forgotten that along the way. And everybody just wants to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, how they want to do it, with no consequences whatsoever. Well, guess what? You can do what you want, but understand there's the consequences that come along with that. I have no problem with the NFL taking that position. I have no problem with the NBA or any other sports league taking that position. And not only do I co-sign with them, I will stand tall in supporting their position on this matter because they are right.
Well said. Well said. I mean, at the end, also put all that. Don't we want to get out of this mess already? I mean, let's get out of this mess already. That's what
it is. What it is, man.
Yeah. Stephen A. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this, and I appreciate you doing this from your car. And First Take and Stephen A's World. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
You too. Be well. All right, time for the weekly train of thought segment. I'm going to pull back the curtain completely here. Right before we started to hit record on this with Sal Licata from SNY, WFAN, who's been a smash hit over the weeks here, he said this is going to be a letdown after Stephen A. So no pressure. Like, no one's expecting anything now from you. So just
impossible to follow that. Exactly.
Just let it fly. I got a little thrown off when I was interviewing Stephen A, because in the middle, maybe three quarters of the way in, I saw on Twitter that Britney has been freed. So I was very excited about that. I debated asking Stephen A about it, but then I thought maybe I should leave that alone. Save it for Sal.
Yeah. And that's a topic we could discuss. I was thinking of you too when I saw the news. Now, this has been kind of expected, right? Over the last couple of weeks. Now it's official, but it's been kind of expected.
I think so. So
good for her.
We got some train of thoughts topics. We've got some Apple reviews. We're scrapping the picks. I figured they don't fit in. And how long are we supposed to do this? At some point, I got to get out of here. So we'll do train of thoughts. We'll read Apple reviews. We'll beg you to leave Apple reviews for me to read. And we'll scrap the NFL.
I like the reviews idea because it's interactive, right? I mean, people send a nice review. They get to hear us react to it live, which I think is a cool idea. So I like that.
All right. Let's do train of thoughts. Topic number one, biggest story in sports by far and away for the week is Tom Brady goes into New England to return on Sunday night, Bucks Patriots, NBC, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, the whole deal. But this book is coming out about the Patriots and Belichick and the end of Brady, Seth Wickersham from ESPN, and some details have dribbled out. First of all, this book's going to be a must read, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Although the problem is you get these headlines and excerpts, you know, really what's there to read, right? I'm assuming we're getting all the juice now. So I really got to go through the monotony of reading a, 300 plus page book and already knowing the highlights from it. That's my issue with it.
Like Sal said, there's been a lot already that's come out. For me, the biggest thing by far, Bill couldn't meet with Tom Brady in person when Tom decided to leave to say goodbye. Come on, really? Yeah. Like, I know you're just, you know, this robot of an NFL coach and the greatest coach. The guy who was there for 20 years, you can't meet him in person, Bill?
It's like a breakup and you want to do it in person, but the other person is unwilling to meet up with you. And you're like, what do you mean? We spent all this time together. How could you not even give me that respect? And he did call Mo the GOAT, right? I mean, so at least he got that out of him.
Maybe just Belichick has this issue with personal relationships, because obviously it's a professional relationship. He's his boss, he's his coach, however you want to look at it. But like, you know, I know Tom Brady doesn't get a lot of sympathy from people around the country because people hate anyone who's good at what they do. But the guy's there for 20 years and wants to say goodbye to Bill in person. I mean, you've described it perfectly. Like, it reminds me of, like, what's the movie where the guy standing at the window crying and the girl doesn't want to let him up. Right. So, I mean, Tom is like the jilted lover. It's terrible.
I will say, but look, I do think that this part of the equation takes a little bit of away from something, although I'm into it. Now, look, I'm neither a Bucs nor Patriots fan, but I cannot wait for this. I love the Adele preview clip that they put out there. Yeah, it was great. The fact that Brady already won a Super Bowl in year one with the Bucs, I mean, much as I love Bill. And by the way, did you see Belichick last week with the reporters like, hey, what'd you see with Mac Jones, 3 interceptions? He's like, same thing.
I love Bill so much. I saw it. He's a content machine. I feel the same way. I thought Brady came off pretty – Brady comes off pretty good in all this stuff.
Agreed. Like. His personality has been shown to the world now. He's got a dynamic personality. He won the Super Bowl already. Belichick's teams have struggled, whether it be with Cam Newton last year. The Patriots don't look as good this year. I always have been a fan of Bill. But to your point, look, you spend that much time with somebody, you have that much success, you probably should figure out a way to make it happen in person. Now, we don't know all the details about that, I guess, but you figure out a way to make that happen.
Would you be surprised even 1% if Brady threw 6 touchdowns Sunday night?
No, I think they're going to try to embarrass New England. Now, Belichick's still a great coach, but the talent level is not even close. I think Arians and Brady are going to try to run it up and embarrass the Patriots on Sunday night.
I don't know if they'll run it up, but I do think I think Tom's going to be on a mission on Sunday night, and the Patriot offense cannot hang with the Bucs. So that's going to get ugly.
You know what's the weirdest dynamic to me is that it's almost like it's everybody versus Belichick, because even the New England fans, they're not anti Tom Brady. Now they're going to be rooting for their Pats, I'm sure, but they understand going in that.
Well, so that's an interesting point. Is the mentality of the Pats fan welcome back, Tom, or is it screw you for leaving us, Tom?
I think it's welcome back. According to what I saw last year, now I don't know this to a fact, but you know, the few Patriots fans that I talked to following it last year, you heard a lot of people that were rooting for Brady.
And well, that's different, though. That's not him, though, going into Foxborough.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, maybe a little different. I mean, look, they're going to be rooting for their Pats, but they have to understand that this would be a very difficult one, if not impossible, to be able to get.
All right, train of thoughts topic number 2. Have you gotten into the Mannings at all on Monday night? Because they had their most buzzed about episode this past week.
So, oddly enough, now you and I texted about this. The first 5 seconds that I watched, I was like, this is brutal. They need a host. This is awful.
And they changed everything after right the first away. 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I heard you talking about it with Marshan. I agree with you guys. Now, even that night after I said it was awful, I did go back to it. And then I watched that broadcast the rest of the way. The second week, I watched that broadcast the entire time. This game, maybe because it was a little different because it was Dallas, Philadelphia, I started out watching the normal feed. And then out of curiosity, I went to it and I saw some clips on Twitter. And then I stuck with the Manning feed. I'm addicted to it. I think they've gotten significantly better. It's funny. I enjoy watching the game that way. So, yeah, after the start that looked like it was going to be a rough go, I love it. I enjoy watching. Unless it's a big game, I enjoy watching like that.
I'm very curious to see what I'm going to do when it's a big game, because I've been with the Mannings. Well, I haven't heard Levy, Greasy, and Riddick for a second. I've been Mannings the whole 3 weeks, plus because of, you know, I'm going to write about it the next day. I did love the fact, because, you know, I do like when there's anarchy and people get upset about things. I love that they're off for 3 weeks after all this buzz.
But we knew that they weren't going to do every game, right?
Right. I don't think people expected a 3 week layoff, though. I mean, they're not back till week 7. The more I think about it, I mean, it really, I sort of kick myself for not realizing it early on, but it really is the perfect situation in terms of, like, That wouldn't work Sunday at 4:25.
Right.
I don't even know if it would work Sunday night, but like Monday night, it's perfect.
Especially one with the crappy games. Yeah. You and Marshan nailed it. And I think Andrew was right when he was talking about, you know, if it's your team in it, you're not watching. The other, you know, you're not watching the Manning feed, you watch the regular feed. The other thing is, all due respect to the three guys who do it, it's not like, you know, if it were I and Eagle, it'd be a little different story. I feel like I might be missing something. We're not missing anything with Levy and Greasy and Riddick. It's just so you want to be more entertained and you go to Peyton and Eli. It's completely different. I think it is a fun way to watch it. And I think it does fit perfectly Monday night.
But meanwhile, at the end of the day, though, the Levy crew is getting 12 million viewers and the Mannings are getting, you know, 1.8. I mean, people still go to the traditional, you know, because these people on Twitter think, could this ever replace it? Well, no, because Peyton and Eli don't want to work 17 weeks. I saw someone, are the ratings going to be higher for ESPN too? No, it's not. That's never going to happen.
Not even close.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a social media play more than anything because you're on Twitter and then you see Eli giving the finger and you're like, oh, I got to see what's going on.
Which was just the greatest thing ever. And I agree with that. And again, I found it fascinating listening to you guys discuss it last week and then trying to understand it myself. Like, we get caught up in sports media in this social media world, and almost everybody on my feed of the 600 plus people that I follow that aren't muted, all those people are tweeting about the Mannings and how great that broadcast is.
Right.
Yet, so in my world, it's like, oh, everybody's watching the Mannings. Right. Yet in reality, millions of people how many times over are watching the traditional feed? So it just shows social media really doesn't.
I got a tweet Monday night during it after I had tweeted something about it from someone, and they're like, oh, this is my first time watching it. The first 2 weeks, I didn't know what channel it was on or something. And I'm just like, what? Here's a quiet. We'll wrap it up with this topic. Legit question. Give me if the answer is zero, say zero. How much would you pay Thursday night for a Manning feed during Jaguars Bengals?
I personally would not pay anything.
You 99 mean like cents. If there was a 99 cents and you could click the button and watch them for 3 hours.
Probably not. And I'll tell you why. Obviously, the dollar.
You're a cheapskate.
No, the dollar is really not that significant. But it's just, when does it end? You know what I mean? Everything now has a paywall behind. If I see a paywall, I'm clicking past it. I'm sorry. I don't mind.
We might have to edit that out. We have a paywall at SI. So let's move on quickly. Let's forget you said that and move on.
All right.
Train of thoughts. Oops, topic man. Number three before I get fired. Big question here. Friday, October 1st, The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos movie, comes out. Will Sal Licata go to a theater to watch it, or will he watch it on HBO Max? Now, you have a kid, so that throws a little wrench into things. Although your mom could watch a kid, but what do you do for that?
Is
that
I'm a movie theater? I'm watching it at home because of the
confirming
easy access.
Sal's a cheapskate.
Yeah, I love going to the movies. I used to love it, but it's a hassle. Then you have to find a babysitter, plan to go out with the wife and all that. I'd rather just sit home on the comfort of my own couch, watch the HBO Max stream, but that is a must watch. You mean that's this Friday already? I didn't even realize
that. And David Chase is pissed that it's on HBO Max.
I love it on there.
He wants it in the movies for a little bit before it's on HBO Max.
I'll tell you this. If it weren't on HBO Max, I'd be in the movie theater. If not the opening night, opening weekend for sure.
But it is. See, you're the reason why David Chase is pissed, because it's the person like you who's going to blow off the movies now to watch on HBO.
What are you going to do? I know you're a big movie goer. Are you going to watch it in the theater? Or
I haven't been to the movie since the pandemic started. I would like to go see it in the movie theater. It's hard though, because with football here, it's impossible to get to a movie theater. You know, I mean, I got games to watch and.
Right, there's too much going on in a football fall weekend.
I would like to go to the theater to see it, though. That, to me, is a movie theater movie.
That's where I disagree with you. We talked about this earlier. Because it was a TV show, to me, it's an extension of that, as opposed to if it were some kind of Star Wars movie or Marvel movie or whatever. Then maybe I'd want to go and get the experience in the theater. This is not about the sound or the effects. This is a TV show, a prequel of a show that we watched on TV for 15 years.
But it's not
going to
be a show. It's going to be a movie.
Still, I mean, you know.
All right. Train of thoughts topic number four. Curb is back October 24th. I'm not going to do it now because it's going to take too long, but we've got it. Maybe next week we'll tell the story of when we met Larry.
Oh, God. Great story. I'm still upset with myself.
But I did want to ask you, with Curb coming back, because I hate getting this question, and now I'm going to ask it to you because I hate it. Do you have a single favorite episode?
It's impossible. I could give you two scenes that come to the top of my head real quick. Go ahead. One where he's leaving a voice message for Irv Schwimmer. And
yes.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, he hits the car. Oh, you bleeping it, you know, yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then Irv at the end of the episode, you blah, blah, that I love. And then the, probably the shrimp boat one where Larry gets so mad about the shrimp and go by yourself, you know, so those two scenes, but I can't pick out one singular episode.
Right. I know. I hate when people ask me that question.
You have that or not? And by the way, I'm due for a rewatch. I got to go back and watch all those again. It's been too long.
I rewatched it when the pandemic first started.
So you're fresh on that then?
I'm good. Yeah.
You have one in particular that you love? Beloved aunt or
Crazy Eyes Killer is the one and Bald Asshole, the Halloween one. Those are the two that always, and I love the one with Shaq when he trips Shaq. But Crazy Eyes Killer and the Bald Asshole Halloween one are the probably the two I laughed at the most, I think. But I'd have to look. All right, let's read some reviews and then we'll get everyone out of here. I glanced at some of these, and I don't know if you got the whole family leaving reviews or what you're doing, but my God, there's a lot of Sal love on these reviews.
Really?
Yeah. Here we go. This is someone called Nath, N-A-T-H, Nath Dragon 123. Really love the pod, especially the inside sports media stuff with guys like Marchand. Don't love the wrestling stuff, but that's the beauty of Fast Forward. Have become a big fan of both you and Sal through the Train of Thought segment. And although this segment is like two friends hanging at a bar, I would presume to interrupt, but I might buy you both a beer.
That's
very nice.
Yeah. See, that to me is the greatest compliment. You and I just BSing, people want to come hang out.
Had to get in the shot at the wrestling, but that's fine because Daniel Bryan / Bryan Danielson was on last week. So I'll, but that was very nice. Arizona Phil's fan. Jimmy brings on a wide variety of guests around the world of sports media and has real conversations, which are always entertaining. The more you listen, the more you are drawn to Jimmy's idiosyncrasies, which have him fit in nicely in the Seinfeld and Larry David universe, a nice companion to his friend, arch-rival Richard Deitch's sports media pod. I don't know if I want to be a companion to the Deitch pod. I should be above the Deitch pod, and the Deitch pod should be like a supplement to my pod. Right. Love you, Richard. Here's the thing. I feel like, and listen, you know me almost as well as anybody off this podcast. Mm-hmm. I feel like I give people maybe publicly 10% of my idiosyncrasies.
Well, because the rest of it couldn't be aired. I mean, you can't.
There's a lot more going on. Yeah, that's true. That's why I love Seinfeld and Curb. I was like, wait, I'm not the only person that's never wanted a house tour in my life.
Right.
Like, okay. M. Hogan 1306, Jimmy, you have a great podcast. Okay, I'll take it. I mean, perfect. A little creativity in the review would be nice, but we'll take it.
Took the time to do it, though, and it was positive. Yeah, you got to respect
exactly.
That.
Yeah, five. All right, this one. Okay, this makes it. Alex A. Wright, I'm so happy that I found this podcast. As a sports journalism student in college, I love hearing from the wide variety of guests Jimmy has, from writers, radio people, TV broadcasters, so much more. So the fact that someone in college is listening to me makes me feel good, since I'm about 75 years old. I've learned more by listening to this podcast that I have in some of my journalism classes. It's so fascinating to learn about these people I see on TV or follow on social media. It's piqued my interest so much that sports media would be a beat I would like to cover someday in my career. Here's an idea for a future episode. We need a podcast with Jimmy, Oran Deitch, and Marchand. That would be epic. It's a lot.
Can you make that happen?
A lot of chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah. Too much ego to deal with there.
I don't know if I can control all that. It's a lot. It's a lot. It could be fun. Connor Nuke. Every episode of the show is fantastic, and I love the guests. Being in the sports media business, I always love hearing from those who have made it to the top, especially the play-by-play broadcasters like Ian Eagle and Joe Buck. I also like the Train of Thought segments, but I had never heard of Salicata, so I looked him up on Twitter. Turns out he has the baseball takes of a 90-year-old curmudgeon. Come on, Sal, put it together. Sal is very old school when it comes to baseball.
Of course. I hate the way the game has evolved right now, but I mean, I still love it. It's probably my favorite sport.
Would you say that's a positive or a negative?
I think positive. Two things. One, he is now familiar with me because of this podcast, so I like that. Two, he went to check out the Twitter, and if the worst thing he could say about me is that my baseball takes are old, I'm okay with that.
Here's the information we need. The information we need is, did he follow you after checking out your Twitter page? Doesn't sound like he did. He would have probably meant, you know, you basically wanting, you know, someone to get beamed in the head if they flip the bat is probably got you not followed by that guy.
Yeah, I wonder, now I'm curious what on my Twitter feed would make him think that, because generally I'm just ripping the Mets or, you know, talking about the Yankees. What am I, where would you get that my old school baseball thoughts from on there? But anyway. I know what it was. Exit velo. I hate the exit velo. Hate it.
Right.
So that's what it was.
Me too. I don't understand it. I hate it too. But I try not to tweet about sports because people are nuts. BBR319. Sal has been a great addition. So there we go. Now we pick you up. Always enjoy Oran, James, Andrew Miller, and Marshan. Would love to see John Jastrzemski from The Ringer as a guest, and I'm not even from New York. Don't think a New York only guy would be good on the pod that goes national, even though I usually do. So I do that sometimes, but I don't really have a relationship with John Jastrzemski. So, all right, last one. John Widowski. Do you love the minutia and shenanigans of the world of sports? Oh, I don't want to read this. He's insulting the guest. I just said, have I got the podcast for you? If you're a dude born in the 80s who likes sports, this pod is literally a quality hour to bro out. With a focus on New York sports and Seinfeld references, Jimmy can't be beat. He refuses to watch Saving Private Ryan, but even him being that dumb couldn't make me not give this podcast a 5-star review. Yeah, still haven't watched it and never will. All right, well, I appreciate those are good reviews. The love for Sal keeps coming in. So if you're still listening, leave a review. I will read it next week on the podcast. And that wraps it up. Sal, thanks as always. And hopefully there's no exit velocity tweets for you tonight.
Let's see. No, you're right. The best thing that you said there was you don't tweet about sports, which it just drives me nuts.
I can't because no matter what you say, someone's going to argue.
Exactly. Bang. You
say Tom Brady played a break. If you just tweet Tom Brady played a great game, someone will rip you for that take.
Right. Exactly. They take it out of context completely. You could I got one this week. So I liked a tweet and somebody was complaining of the tweet that I liked and interpreting the way that he thought that it was. And I was like, dude, I liked the tweet. I'm allowed to like what I want. Leave me the bleep alone.
Here's what I think we're going to do.
Blocked.
Yeah. Since, well, you with the block. I mean, forget it. Here's what we're going to do. Since we got rid of the weekly NFL picks because nobody cared and I was terrible. And it wasn't, I think every week we may have to add a segment on like what's going on with Sal on Twitter this week.
Oh God. Yeah.
Hopefully I've known Sal. I would say I've gotten texts and phone calls from Sal. I'd say every 3 months over the course of a 10-year friendship telling me he's quit Twitter.
Yeah, I know. And it's been 10 years. Unfortunately, I can't shake it. I'm stuck.
I want to know the tweet you liked that pissed somebody off.
You want me to tell you that now?
Is it worth it or not?
Yeah, it has to do with it was Dame Lillard talking about how he
the vaccine.
Did you see that? Yeah, did you see that clip?
Yes.
Now, I don't give my opinion on this one way or another. I always stay away from it, but I just thought that the way that he said it was very open and honest,
eloquent,
and raw.
Yeah.
And I respected it. Not saying that he's right or wrong, whatever. All I did was I liked it because I thought it was, you know, just open and raw and honest about it, where you hear a lot of guys.
And some guy gave you shit for liking.
Yes. And goes to this whole thing. Well, like I got an agenda and I shouldn't be preaching one way. And I'm like, what? I like the tweet.
That is phenomenal. Yeah, love it. Man. That is because that is such a trigger. I know that probably for a half hour, your day was consumed with that guy responding to you.
You know what I did? Tweet. So I went to, I DM'd him and I said something like,
what are you doing?
Well,
what are you doing?
I DM'd him and said something like,
stop DMing random people.
Yeah, I said something like, get lost, you moron. And I'm going to wait for you to see this until I block you. And as soon as I saw like the dots come up, like he was going to respond, block. And then he couldn't do anything about it. I know you're right. It's the only way that I could feel like I at least have some say back. I mean, how stupid is that? You're getting on me for liking a tweet. I didn't even say anything about it. Yeah, I know.
You're DMing random people and blocking them when you see the dots.
Yeah. I want to make sure you read this before I block you.
Perfect way to end the episode. All right. Goodbye.
Talk to you later.
See you next week.
All right.
All right. My thanks to Stephen A. Smith and my buddy Sal Cotta for this week's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Love the conversation with Stephen A. I didn't mention this at the top, I'm just realizing, but if you missed any previous episodes of the SI Media podcast, go into the archives and check them out. Brian Danielson from AEW and Andrew Marchand from the New York Post were on the podcast last week. Jimmy Kimmel and Cousin Sal 2 weeks ago. Tony Romo 3 weeks ago. If you missed any of those interviews, go into the archives, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, that wraps it up for this week. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Stay safe and take care.